He's a former pro, an SEC analyst, and a damn good dog. Max Dinchcombe is only on the College Football Voice of the South. Presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and ASW Distillery.
He is Matt Stinchcomb, College Football Hall of Famer, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Matt, safe to say when you talk about non-conference matchups, this is the biggest one in the history of Sanford Stadium?
Man, non-conference matchups. Well, I mean, you know, technically Tech is not in the same conference, but it does happen every year. So from a rivalry standpoint, no. But from I think fan entrance, interest, and novelty standpoint. Golly, yeah, I didn't think about it that. I guess historically it would have to be.
Yeah, we talked about
the likelihood of it happening, you know?
Earlier in the program, we talked about it. This is the first non-SEC matchup between top 10 teams at Sanford Stadium since it was Georgia Tech 2 years after they left the SEC in 1966. So when you talk about a historical perspective, this is it.
Man, well, and hence the interest to get into the stadium. And I will say, you know, 2 years ago in South Bend, a lot of that interest was stemming from one side of the contest, Georgia fans. They take over Notre Dame Stadium. That's not going to happen this weekend. And I've heard from plenty of folks that are Notre Dame supporters. They're excited about this game, too. Those folks are everywhere. It's a national school, national brand, to be sure. The historical program, all those things. They'll have their segment, but that's all they'll have, because I can't imagine there being any typically held Georgia sections that will have converted to Notre Dame fans. I don't know any Georgia people that if they can't make this game, they're not going to be selling them to any Notre Dame fans.
Well, Matt, it's funny you bring that up, because I'm sitting 18 feet or less, 9 feet, 6 feet, I'm very bad at this, away from a guy who told me that he was a Georgia fan and had his season tickets for the last 40 years. He'd sell it for $750 a piece. And now, hold on, I don't want to look into your pocket, but are you a ticket holder as well? Do you have tickets for the stadium every week?
I do, yes.
Okay. What would happen if you sold your tickets and a guy in a leprechaun outfit showed up sitting next to all of the people that you and your family have been sitting next to for years? What happens to you at that point?
You know what? I've never I don't think I don't know if I've ever sat in those seats since I'm in some other SEC stadium. But if they knew that they were mine, they wouldn't be happy. And I know that I would not be happy were I to be sitting in those seats and the people that I typically see around me, and all of a sudden it's the opposing team, especially in a contest like this one, because home field matters, because crowd support matters, because people say all the time, you know, Vegas will give you 3 points. I'm not worried about point spreads as a player. What I am worried about is a key third down. What I am thinking about is, you know, when you need a little bit of juice, a little bit of energy from the atmosphere, and you're the home team, you want that fan support to be there. And what you can't have is what the Notre Dame fans did to their team 2 years ago, which was full-blown sellout on the team that you supposedly support. I found that look to be revolting as a former player. If I was Quentin Nelson and some of those guys for Notre Dame 2 years ago, I would have been furious at my own fan base that they would sell me out like that. It was a key third down at the end of the game that they're laid off the ball as offensive linemen because they can't hear. Georgia fans are loud in that stadium. I know plenty of folks that went there. And so when you turn around and do that to your own home team, it's not a good look. Fans don't take kindly to that sort of thing, and frankly, they shouldn't.
So I'm revolting. I've been called worse. Matt Stinchcombe with us
on the
Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.
He gladly smiled and said, oh, yeah, 40 years of family, 3 generations of tickets. Who cares?
Yeah, but Matt knows me. I'm a sociopath. He understands I'm the exception to the rule.
Jeez. But, you know, the good news is you probably sold them to the Nebraska fans. And who else? Ohio State, didn't they come in there and they turned the stadium red? I mean, this has happened before.
Right.
At least a precedent had been set.
Yeah. That is very true.
I don't know how much, when you become a player at the University of Georgia, how much tradition is given to you, instilled in you through osmosis? Because I just mentioned that 1980 season, they were 6-5 the year before. I'm going to be honest. I've lived here forever. I didn't realize they were a 6-5 team. It was a 10-conference, 6-conference games league. They missed number 5, Alabama, that year. You were undefeated. You got there. But how much of the history when you come in to play football at Georgia, are you responsible to know, or do you take upon yourself to be responsible to know?
Nah, you know, you got to take it upon yourself. I will say, I think a lot of that has been lost through the years, and I think part of it's a function of, you know, clowns like me. We televise everything. All the games are on TV. Before, you know, you were only aware of a smaller number of games. You could only visualize whether you were in venue or watched it on TV. You know, that's how those memories tend to stick. You know, reading about it in the paper, as good of a job as the sports journalists do, it ain't the same. So reading about a victory back then, you know, you had a smaller sample size. So I think there was a greater impression that could be had on earlier generations, guys like me. I mean, I was 3 years old when Georgia won the national championship. That's painful to state that fact. But I was aware of who they played and what happened in that game. I've seen clips from that game. I don't know that awareness is quite the same anymore, and that's not the fault of anything. There is no millennial generational issue. I think it's just borderline. It's like a big data thing. There's games everywhere. You see all kinds of games. There's not this smaller set of awareness about stuff like that. I mean, these guys, the guys on this team now, their awareness is, hey, we won a tight game 2 years ago in what was a near national championship winning season. That's their awareness of Notre Dame. And a lot of them, especially the young guys that are contributing now, their awareness is whatever game film that's being shown to them right now by the coaching staff.
Matt Stinchcomb with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. When you talk about game film, you see a quarterback like Ian Book. Kirby Smart, that was the only Notre Dame player he brought up. J.R. Reed compared him to Johnny Manziel. He's one of those guys that you can do everything right, but he can make you crazy, can he not?
He can, and he's one of those guys that Johnny Manziel is probably a good example. Skill set, I don't think he's quite as skilled as what we saw with Manziel, and let's be real. As a defensive coordinator, you draw it all up, and you get exactly what you wanted, and this guy wrecks it all because he can keep it alive, he can scramble around, and he can throw it behind his head 40 yards downfield to Mike Evans for, you know, who knows, whatever. So who's on the other end of that for Notre Dame? Is it a possibility in this game that the improvisational skills of an Ian Book can break down any defense? A guy that can extend plays like that and hurt you with his legs, it makes you really nervous. I mean, you think about some of the greater defenses that have come out of this conference, and you get a quarterback that can figure out a way to convert on third down, be it scrambling or extending plays on money downs in the red zone. Those are the things that, as a team that is better, and Georgia's better than Notre Dame, no one's arguing, I think, otherwise, it makes you nervous, to say the least. Maybe concerned is a better term, because they faced other mobile guys too. But Ian Book's capability of that gives you pause.
From a player point of view, they've played in big games, a lot of these guys, except for the freshmen, because they haven't, because it's been Vanderbilt and two directional schools, and I'm not sure it's good. Kirby actually said it's the conditioning more than anything he's worried about. Those guys haven't played four quarters of football. 8 o'clock at night, I can't even imagine. What's your skin must be crawling on you as a player to try to wait to get to this one. Do you think, even though they've played in big games, that emotionally, you know, they say it, but you might see a guy throw high. He's got to calm down. You might see a guy get a penalty that he normally wouldn't get because he's so geeked up. I've had guys tell me they're so emotional they lose their breath. You actually have to reset your ability to get control of your own body even early in the game. All of those factors, could they actually cause a start that's so bad that you almost are playing catch-up for the rest of the game?
I don't think that so the answer is yes. I mean, absolutely. You go in there and you're either overhyped, right, and you leave it all in pregame. So by the time you get out there when it counts, you know, your energy's kind of crashing. That happens to a lot of guys. I think anybody who's competed, anybody who's ever gotten up, I mean, really gotten up, and there's a ton of build-up to this game, and game day will be there, and this is the matchup, and all the things that you mentioned. It's going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. And so because of that, the concern isn't, you know, oh, it's a late kick. You know, you hadn't played anybody. Can you sustain the energy for four quarters? It's can you not, you know, blow it all out just before kickoff? You mess around and you get too hype. And the first quarter you get out there, you're dead-legged. You know, you're out there. I've seen guys borderline hyperventilating because they're so jacked up to get out there and play that they're out of their minds physically and mentally. They just can't get it right. Coaches pull them out. You got to calm them down. You go out there. Maybe it's a bad series. It's three and out. You sit them on the bench. It's like, hey, man, get your head screwed on. That's why a lot of times you'll see, like in Super Bowls, you just go out there and you just got to run a play. Nothing crazy. Nothing exotic. You know, in these big games, just get a play under your belt. Everybody. You know, Peyton Manning tries to check. He tries to audible the first play of that Super Bowl versus the Seahawks. It's a bad snap. Everybody's amped up. They don't know what's going on. Recovery for a touchdown, and they never bounce back. I'm not saying that same scenario happens here. I don't think Notre Dame's good enough. I think Georgia is good enough to start poorly, not that poorly, not for a sustained period of time, but they can come out there, be overamped, and be able to recover, but you don't want that. Of course, that's what the coaches, I think, their biggest challenge is. Previous 2 weeks, we got to get these guys' minds right. They got to hone in. We talked about it last week. Don't look ahead to Notre Dame. Just look at Arkansas State. They did that. They focused on the task at hand. That was as well-rounded a victory as you'll find.
And I think
now it's don't get too hyped, boys.
Yeah, and I think you keep things simple if you're Georgia. You've got big maulers, strong guys playing offensive line. You've got a stable of running backs. You wear down that Notre Dame defense, and you take advantage of every opportunity as the game goes on.
Yes. Yep. That game plan makes a lot of sense. Go out there and I don't say be vanilla, but go out there and absolutely establish that identity. That's who they want to be, right? But the other piece of it, too, is it addresses what you're getting at, Chris, is that, you know, there's a lot of hype. So Georgia gets the ball first, run a play. Hand the ball off to DeAndre Swift. Let him get downhill and bang his head against somebody.
What would you do if you won the toss?
I'd take the ball.
You want the ball?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd take the ball. Offensively, I'd want to be able to get out there. And look, cut those big boys loose. Right? Those offensive linemen are usually pretty good about it. You know, we're not the guys breaking the banner. We're not the ones that are usually the guys that are going to have to hit the oxygen before kickoff. And we pace ourselves. So because of that, they've been building up, right? They want to cut it loose. It's probably been since Thursday or Friday, not real physical practices. And this is your opportunity on the big stage. I'd want those guys to be able to cut loose on that first play. And then, like we're just talking about, I'd want to take the ball. First play, I want to run something downhill right at these guys. Let's just see what we got.
If you're Notre Dame, do you want to do the same thing on offense? Put yourself in a Kelly shoes. Do you want to take a big bang shot to start this game if you get the ball first?
I don't know. Now, you know, you take a big shot, now you're second and 10. Now you're staring at, you know, easy a third and 5+ maybe if you just get an adequate play on second down, and then what? And that place is rocking and rolling on that first series. I think I go out there, I run a play, and I hope I get 3 yards.
Matt, what game you got this week?
Kentucky and Mississippi State. Kentucky at Mississippi State. Battle of the backup quarterbacks.
That is true. I'm kind of curious with the Kentucky faithful, or more importantly, the players, I guess, coming off of last week. That had to be thoroughly, thoroughly disappointing. Well,
Mississippi State, too.
Brutal. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, both these fan bases are just being tortured, right? Kentucky, 3 out of the last 4 years, guys. I mean, the last two trips up, even to Lexington, and Kentucky has I don't want to say given the game away. They outplayed Florida and lost. They found a way to lose. You know, you go for it on fourth down when you're facing a backup quarterback. You know, I think you punt right there, make them drive the field. But they go for it. They don't get it. They got a third and short. They don't get it. You know, it could have easily broken the other way. It didn't for Kentucky. So they're kind of jacked at their coaches and all that sort of thing. The fans are sideways, maybe justifiably so. Same for Mississippi State. I mean, they could have beaten Kansas State with a rookie head coach and Chris Klieman coming up for North Dakota State. But both of these teams are different on defense, and both of them have to run the football. So we'll be interested to see how that shakes out on Saturday.
I know you're traveling. I know you have family. Just two quick scenarios. Pat Narduzzi attempts to kick the field, doesn't even get it at the one-yard line. What are you telling your team for the rest of the year in a 17-10 game?
You know, that's a message play, right? You know, what are you telling to your sideline? Where's the trust and that sort of thing? Where you get there are decisions in games where I see coaches and people say, man, the card doesn't say that's not the strategy right here. You know, you don't go for it right here. The card says, the strategy says, conventional wisdom says, you do or don't do this. Well, sometimes. First of all, that didn't make a ton of sense in my opinion. But the other piece of it is that what message are you sending to your sideline?
Right. I think it's terrible. I think you lose, guys. And the other one was Cliff Kingsbury kicks 3 field goals inside the 5-yard line in the game they lose. I don't know. If I'm an offensive lineman, I'm out of my mind that my head coach is kicking three field goals inside the five.
Oh, but let's also say, you know, that cuts both ways, because some of it is these head coaches are like, hey, man, you haven't done anything to make me trust you. So we get inside the five, and by the time we've gotten to fourth down, I gave you three cracks at it. I don't know the specific mm-hmm. circumstances of that one. But regardless, I've had coaches tell us that. We get over to the sideline, we're acting all dejected and hot at the play calling, and they're sitting over there going, well, who are you kidding? Are y'all seeing the way you're blocking out here? Or whatever. Maybe you got stuffed on an early third down. You think I'm going to give you, you know, risk the rest of the team scoring chances and count on you clowns? I gave you three cracks at it, and you couldn't get it done. There's an argument for that as well.
That's very rational. That's very disappointing and very rational from you.
You let Domino down. Listen, Matt Stinchcomb, enjoy Stark Vegas. We'll talk about hopefully a Georgia victory next week.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Matt Stinchcomb on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the fans.
We must have
93.7 FM.
We speak to the sanest offensive lineman in the history of offensive linemen.
I believe we do. I think you're right about that.